honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by the U.S. Army. Find your place on the Army team at goarmy.com/warriors.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, on a week in which the world paused to honor those who gave their lives, those who spilled their blood, and those who risked their futures for the cause of freedom on June 6, 1944, and all the harrowing days that followed in World War II. We're going to hear more of President Donald Trump's D-Day remarks in a bit. You heard him echo the words of his predecessors, Roosevelt and Eisenhower, as he referred to that great crusade that the liberation of Europe represented. If you watch the speech on television, and I do have it posted for you at hometownheroesradio.com, you could see not far behind the president's right shoulder a well-dressed 93-year-old in a Navy hat named Jerry Deitch. He was 18 when the New York native arrived on Normandy's Utah beach with Naval Combat Demolition Unit 30 in the early morning hours of June 6, 1944.
Well, we trained for it. We did train for it. We trained in England, and we trained constantly. We trained day and night. We trained how the landing's going to take place. We knew everything, except where we were going. We had no idea where we were going. Then we went to a marshalling area, which was 48 hours before we boarded ships to go. When we went in, started the invasion, we went in on the first wave, I was sure that I was not going to see my family again. I saw bodies floating all around me, and you're oblivious of it. You really, maybe because you say, thank God it's not me, but you don't, you just look right past it. It was never happening. Was I in shock? I possibly was. Possibly was, and I think everybody else was.
Well, and let me rewind just a little bit to when you said that, 48 hours ahead of time, you find out this is happening now. You probably have no idea how big this is going to be, how many other people are involved. But what did you understand your mission or assignment or role to be before you went across the channel?
We knew right away that we were going to go in first. And if there were any obstacles that would be in the way of the first wave coming in behind us, that we would take care of that. We would make room for them to land. And in most cases, they couldn't. They stopped their boats in about 4 feet of water. Many of them may have drowned because they had all the gear on them, and they may have drowned because they just couldn't get ashore.
So a few questions come to mind just to try to fill in the blanks for people listening here. This is NCDU 30, Naval Combat Demolition Unit 30. You guys had 100 men in that unit?
I don't recall whether it was 50 at Utah Beach and 50 at Omaha Beach, or was it 100 and 100? It seems to me 50 and 50. But Omaha Beach was tough. They ran against cliffs, and the Germans were above just throwing everything at them down the cliffs. We came in on regular landing crafts, We got off LSTs, and we got on smaller boats.
Like LCVPs or rubber boats?
Yeah. Not rubber boats, no. LCVP. It was cold. It was cold. And it was rough. The weather was rough. As a matter of fact, I remember, and it's going to be in my mind for years to come, going down the ropes. The boats were coming up because of the waves, coming up and then dropping maybe 25 feet, coming up and dropping. And the guys that were there before me down in the boats saying, not yet, not yet, leave go and drop. And they were ready to catch you if the boat was going down. I had two guys catch me, Because of all the gear that I had on me.
Yeah, what were you carrying?
I was carrying a knapsack. I was carrying a rifle. I was carrying a mess kit. And, of course, I had heavy combat boots and a heavy uniform on. And I know that on my back, that was 30 pounds that I was carrying.
And you're not the biggest guy in the world.
I was the shortest one in the unit. Everybody was between 5'10 and 6'4.
And you're 5'7?
5'7.
And you carrying explosives?
No, what we did was we unloaded the boat. It was just, there were three rookies, myself and two others, and they left us to carry all the explosives ashore. Well, out of, I think there were four of us. Out of the four, two ran, and I and another guy, we carried them ashore and came back, carried them ashore, and we were in 2 foot of water. Of course, I couldn't land on the way.
So this is Utah Beach on June 6, 1944. And what's happening around you? That's what you're doing. But what are you seeing? What are you hearing?
I saw a tank come on just before us. One tank. And I saw people huddling behind the tank, not realizing that we're taking cover. I went ahead and got up to the tank and put my hands out. Like, it was cold. And I thought they were warming themselves. No. And somebody behind me says, keep low, because German 88s were pounding the beach. As the tide was coming in, they were coming closer and closer.
And you saw American servicemen who'd already been killed.
Yeah, had already been killed and getting killed. And the guy next to me in my outfit was killed immediately. He didn't even know what hit him.
How far away was he from you?
Oh, I would say 2 feet. Maybe less than that. He was almost standing next to me.
So how did you experience that?
I don't know. I right now and afterwards, I think I was in shock. I didn't think about it. I thought, going through my mind, this is what I have to do. This is what I have to do. This is the way I have to set up the explosives. This is what I'm looking for.
But you're there, and he's next to you, and then a moment later, he's gone?
Yeah. And you want to know something? It didn't hit me. It didn't hit me. When I got to the hospital 3 days later, that's when it hit me. It hit me that all these guys that I trained with were gone. Soldiers that I didn't know, that they had to be not much older than me.
And you're just 18, yeah. And you mentioned unloading all the explosives and the supplies for your unit. What about the rest of that day? Because it's been famously called the longest day. What were you doing the rest of June 6th, okay, and how long did it feel for you?
We were busy clearing up the beaches with obstacles that were in the way of the guys coming down. We did that without even thinking, and we cleared everything away. Then we had a pillbox that was about, I would say, a quarter of a mile from where we were, and maybe it was a little less than that. And we went ahead and put explosives around there. Nobody, we didn't see anybody. And then we ducked back about 100 yards back, and we saw them coming out, Germans coming out with their hands raised, surrendering. We don't know how many were killed.
So did you blow the pillbox or no?
We blew it. Yeah, we gave ourselves 10 minutes and we blew it. 10 minutes to get out of the way, get the hell out of the way.
So it was after you detonated the explosives that they came running out?
Yeah, they came running out. How many were in there? How many were killed? I don't know. But they came out and my commanding officer took prisoners and turned them over to the infantry right away. I don't know how many.
And before that, when you said, you know, for the next several hours you were clearing obstructions on the beach, does that mean you're setting explosives on those obstructions?
Setting explosives, yeah. They were obstacles in the way, yeah.
Like those famous tank obstructions we see?
Yeah, and telemines. There was mines on posts.
This is pretty dangerous work, Jerry.
Yeah, but I was pretty young, 18 guys. I 18-year-old is indestructible.
But you're surrounded by chaos, by death, by destruction. And none of that slowed you down or fazed you or gave you pause?
No, you know when it bothered me? When I was in a hospital for 3 nights. I slept the first night. I was dead tired. But after that, I was up most of the night. On my mind was, I'm never going to see my family again. And I'm not going to see my buddies again that I went through boot camp and volunteered with. I couldn't get that out of my mind.
Well, and you mentioned a couple times being in the hospital. I'm sure people are saying, hospital? Well, what put him in the hospital? What happened? Tell us a story. What is that story? What happened?
Okay, what happened was, I don't want to blame it on somebody, but somebody in my outfit, we dug foxholes. And somebody in my outfit, when they started bombardment, they had 88s miles away that were beltering the beach. Someone went into the foxhole that I made. And I looked, and I wasn't going to jump on him. And I just went ahead about 5-6 feet. And all of a sudden, there was an explosion. And I heard a bang on my helmet. And then I went down, and I had a concussion.
Did it knock you unconscious?
Dazed, because I didn't want to go. I said, I'm not going. And my commanding officer says, you are going. I know the medic stuck a flashlight in front of my eyes, and obviously he didn't like what he saw, and he says, you are going.
Well, I don't want to be melodramatic, but I'm just thinking about that moment. And you don't know how big a piece of shrapnel hit you, but it...
I don't know what hit me. My commanding officer said it was shrapnel all over the place.
Well, and I guess it hit you in the right spot, right?
Yeah. All I had was a big dent on my helmet. And it took a lot to dent that helmet.
And if you didn't have the helmet, it would have killed you.
I would have been dead.
Well, and even if you had the helmet, but that was a few inches lower?
I don't know what would have happened. I would have been knocked out for sure. Here I was in the daze. Then when I got on a ship to take me to the... It was an English hospital that taken over by the United States Army. They said I slept for 12 hours.
And you said that was the time when you're sitting in that hospital that your mind started to comprehend some of what you'd been doing?
Yeah, I knew right then and there that I said, I'm not going to see my family again. I'm not going to see my buddies again.
But you chose to rejoin your buddies when they told you you don't have to. Tell me what happened there.
They told me, they said, we could put you on a hospital ship and you go back to the United States. And I said, no, I know that we were preparing. We didn't know where. We didn't know where we were preparing for another landing. I says, they're going to leave for Italy and train there. So I want to be there when they leave for Italy.
So you were gone from the unit for how long?
I was in the hospital for 8 days.
Was anybody surprised to see you when you came back?
My commanding officer said I was in an army uniform. They took my fatigues away. And the only thing that left me was with combat boots. And they burnt everything else. So they gave me an army uniform, which was 10 sizes too big for the little guy I was. And the nurses went ahead and pinned it up for me and did everything. The blouse came down to my knees. And then they gave me free tickets on a train to go to Plymouth, Southern England. I got on that train, and this I remember vividly. The people were buying sandwiches and tea, which was the English drink. Two Englishmen came over to me, and they said, here are sandwiches on us. And at that time, I had tears in my eyes, and I wasn't that kind of guy. Rarely did I get tears in my eyes.
Well, it shows you what it meant to them that so many Americans were over there trying to save their homeland. And so you got back to your unit, and you looked a little funny compared to what they were wearing?
Yeah, walked in, and my commanding officer says, hey, Deitch, what are you doing, joining the Army? I said, does it look like it? I said, I don't even fit with this.
So what happened from there? You had another invasion to make?
Yeah, so from there, you know, they outfitted me with more combat stuff, and they had to give me a rifle and all. And we got on a ship, a troop ship, and we went to Naples, Italy. And from there, we got on trucks, and we went to Salerno, Italy. And there they set up a training base. And the weather there was the kind of weather that you have in southern France. So that's where they wanted us to train.
He would go on to participate in the invasion of southern France and then lead an underwater demolition team in the Pacific. The NCDUs and UDTs that Jerry was a part of in World War II would, of course, pave the way for another acronym you know quite well, the Navy SEALs. Jerry Deitch hadn't really talked about his World War II experiences at all until he signed up to go to Washington, D.C. this year with Honor Flight Southern Nevada. The folks there gave me his name, and I had a chance to visit with him and his beautiful wife, Selma, in their Las Vegas home. I aired an episode with Jerry's full story, and the folks at the Best Defense Foundation heard that interview and invited him to Normandy. He had never felt the compulsion to go there before, and really, he wasn't sure how he would handle it emotionally. But there he was, 75 years after being welcomed by enemy fire that dented his helmet and sent him to the hospital, Jerry was welcomed a hero, shaking the hands of the leaders of France, the UK, and yes, the US. When we come back, more of President Trump's speech honoring the heroes of D-Day. Link to that video, as well as the complete original interview with Jerry Deitch at hometownheroesradio.com. And we'll be right back after this. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses go into your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. Gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.